Thank you, guys. Catherine. If you would, turn with me to Joshua chapter 22. Joshua 22. In case you haven't figured it out yet, we're going through the book of Joshua. Chapter 22 begins a whole different section of the book of Joshua. Chapters 1 to 21, as we've been going through those, they focus on crossing the Jordan, and then the central and southern campaigns, northern campaigns to conquer the promised land, and then the division of that land amongst the tribes of Israel, amongst the people. And as we've been working our way through the book of Joshua, we've been seeing that Joshua is about what? Remember, this is about real people. I'm hearing it. Real people, right? They're facing enormous challenges and learning to trust God along the way. And we've been seeing that trusting God requires consecration. Everything that we are totally surrendered to God. Nothing held back. Nothing held on to. It's all God's. And God, if we will trust Him, He will forgive us and set us free from our past. He will renew us and cleanse us and heal us and place before us new opportunities. He will give direction to our lives, guidance on how to live our lives as He has designed them to be lived. And we've seen that in all the stuff of life, often increasing difficulties, when life seems stacked against us, when we can think of all kinds of reasons to just quit and throw in the towel, to give up, if we will turn to God, God will be there with us and for us. Okay, the battle is whose? God's, right? Who brings the victory? God. Who always fulfills His promises? God. So ultimately, it's a pretty simple formula. Trust self and get creamed. Trust God and get victory. Very simple formula. Does that sound familiar? As we've been watching Israel conquer and divide the promised land, we've seen that the victory and blessing are an outcome of what? Faithful obedience. Okay, say that with me. Victory and blessing are an outcome of faithful obedience. Okay? Without faith, we miss what God has for us. What He desires to do in us and through us, we fall short of honoring and glorifying Him. Faith for the follower of Jesus Christ. Ted reminded us of this morning. Faith for the follower of Jesus Christ is what? It's not an option. Faith is essential to being who God has called us to be. Okay, that's the first 21 chapters. Chapters 22 to 24 focus on what it means for God's people to live by faith as possessors of the promised land, as possessors of the promises of God. Put differently, as seasoned veterans of the Christian life, some of us being more seasoned than others, as seasoned veterans of the Christian life, those who enjoy a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, who've been blessed by God, who have seen Him at work in our lives, how do we live by faith now? How do we live by faith now? Joshua 22, starting at verse 1. Then Joshua summoned the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh and said to them, "You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have listened to my voice and all that I commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers these many days to this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God has given rest to your brothers," as He spoke to them. "Therefore, turn now and go to your tents, to the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan. Only be very careful to observe the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, to love the Lord your God and walk in all His ways and keep His commandments and hold fast to Him and serve Him with all your heart and with all your soul." So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their tents. Now to the one half tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given possession in Bashan, but to the other half, Joshua gave a possession among your brothers westward beyond the Jordan. So when Joshua sent them away to their tents, he blessed them and said to them, "Return to your tents with great riches and with very much livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, iron, and with very many clothes. Divide the spoil of your enemies with your brothers." sons of Reuben, sons of Gad, and half-tribe Manasseh, returned home and departed from the sons of Israel at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go to the land of Gilead, to the land of the possession which they had possessed, according to the command of the Lord through Moses. Whew, let's pause there. There are three things here that we need to understand. First, the commandment that was kept. The commandment that was kept. Say that with me. The commandment that was kept. If you look at the map, you'll see that first which Israel occupied during the central and southern campaigns. And then what they conquered, what they took during the northern campaign, which is what we looked at last Sunday, along with what they had conquered before they entered into the promised land. And if we put the Jordan River back in, you'll see that the divisions of the land that we're referring to here, that we're reading about here, all of which is east of the Jordan River. First, what was given to the half-tribe of Manasseh, and then to Gad, and then what was given to Reuben. Cool. Reuben sandwich, okay, you know. And the reason these two and a half tribes were given that land east of the Jordan River, I know, it's almost lunchtime, were given that land east of the Jordan River was because they asked for it. Remember this? After Israel conquered Sihon and Og, these kings and their kingdoms, and Israel wiped out the Midianites on the east side of the Jordan River, while the people of Israel camped on the east side of the river, waiting for God to take them into the promised land, the tribes of Reuben and Gad, they saw this land on the east side of the river. It was good for grazing livestock, and they had livestock. And they got a pretty comfortable lifestyle going on over there east of the river. And so they came to Moses and they asked him, they said, well, can we stay on this side of the river, on the east side of the river? And Moses, without consulting God, Moses strikes his deal with the tribes of Reuben and Gad and later the half-tribe of Manasseh. And he says, well, if you fight with us now, while we're out conquering the promised land, when we're done with that, you can come and you can live back on the east side of the river. Which is the command that then Moses passed down to Joshua. And he said, now after these guys have fought on your side, after you're victorious, then let them go back to the land that's theirs on the east side of the Jordan. Which is exactly what Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh did. 40,000 warriors of these two and a half tribes, they fought alongside their brothers faithfully, with great bravery, dedication, commitment, sacrifice. I mean, there's no question that they 100% plus fulfilled their end of the bargain. So here in Joshua 22, these warriors, they get an honorable discharge. They're commanded by Joshua for a job well done. They're dismissed to return to the lands on the east side of the Jordan. They're given parting gifts. Right, they're part of the spoils of war, great riches, livestock, valuable metals, clothes. Everything that was a part of the deal that they had made with Moses, everything that Moses had commanded the two and a half tribes and Joshua, they did. Second, we need to understand the contrast between tents and rest. Say that with me. The contrast between tents and rest. Do you remember when Lot and Abraham and their herdsmen got into this conflict over grazing rights, over grazing land? And Abraham said to Lot, well, look, you choose whatever land you want, and whatever's left over, I'll take that. I'll take the leftovers. And so Lot, he looks at the Jordan River Valley with all its water and its prime grazing land. He looks at that. I mean, it's like winning the lottery, okay? Pun intended. A deal not to be missed. And Lot says, well, I'll take that. Abraham gets the leftovers. Lot's choice is based on selfish motives. It's not based on seeking out God. It's a self-focused motivation. And we know that not too far down the road, Lot is in a heap of trouble. That whole section about, the whole thing about Sodom and Gomorrah, the evil lifestyle, fire and brimstone coming down from heaven, Mrs. Lot turning into a pillar of fire thing. Okay, remember that? Lot gets himself into a heap of trouble. Same choice here. It's the same self-focused, not God-focused motivation. God promises Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh the same thing that he promises the other nine and a half tribes. You get the promised land. It's yours. But Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh, they choose what is less than God's choice for them. Why? Because it looks like a better deal for us. In verse 4, Joshua says that God has given rest to your brothers. This is the sixth time that the word rest is used in the book of Joshua. And each time it refers to what's going on in the west side of the Jordan, not in the east. See, on one hand, what's being said here is that the war is over. The Israel's enemies have been wiped out. They've been pounded into submission. We looked at that. But we know that after Israel finished conquering the promised land, Israel fought other battles. They're still surrounded by what should have made them live in fear. So the cessation of hostilities isn't what's being talked about when we talk about rest. Rest in a deeper, more lasting, at the core of who we are, spiritual sense. Rest comes when, despite our circumstances, we learn to choose to trust God, to leave things in God's hands. And then notice that Joshua says in verse 4, therefore, since God gave your rest to your brothers that are on the west side of the Jordan, you all now, you can go to your tents, to the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you. Moses gave it to you beyond the Jordan. The land, the wilderness, okay, is your possession. It's a concession because of a choice that you made. Moses, not God, gave it to you. It's an allowance that God permitted, but it really wasn't the best that God intended for you. Instead of rest, you get tents. Tents have no foundation. They're transitory. They're restless. And that's what life is like when we're trusting ourselves and not God. Third thing we need to understand here is the caution given by Joshua. Say that with me. The caution given by Joshua. There are two significant events in the Old Testament that the writers refer to over and over and over again. The first is the deliverance from Egypt and the passing through the Red Sea. God's people ceasing to be slaves and becoming a nation. The second event, referred to over and over again, second significant event, is the crossing of the Jordan. We looked at that earlier, when we looked earlier in the book of Joshua. When God's people ceased from being wanderers and became possessors of God's promises. And crossing through the Jordan for God's people signifies that whatever was east of the Jordan was left behind. Slavery in Egypt, the wilderness wandering, and the sin that led to it. What's on the west side of the Jordan is God's salvation, His forgiveness, His healing, the promise of a new land and new life. So these eastern 2.5 tribes, they've experienced that. They crossed the Jordan. Warriors, 40,000 of them, they crossed the Jordan with their brothers. They've been circumcised, consecrated to God. They've seen God's provision firsthand. They've experienced His presence. They've watched Him bring victory. But now they've chosen to separate themselves, to move back closer to the influence, the issues and the influence of the godless peoples from which they came. So many Christians try to live their lives like this. We want the blessings of what's west of the Jordan, but we can't let go of the east. We want to experience God's victory, to see God do amazing things in our lives. But ultimately, we want to choose to hang on to our own selfish desires, to choose to remain with the comfortable, to choose to hold back from totally trusting God. We want God on our terms. Spiritual growth at our pace. Stepping out in faith when we choose. Consecration by our standards. Service and sacrifice measured by our comfort level. Worship that entertains us. Sermons that don't step over the line and challenge us too much. It's crucial for us to see that we either live west of the Jordan or east of the Jordan. There's no island in the middle. And like Lot, the decision to remain on the east will ultimately lead these people into a whirling vortex of evil. We got that? Vortex of evil, no reentry. East Interstate 666. Okay, it's your choice. Right. You ever seen these signs? Cuidado, piso mojado. You ever seen those signs? See those? You know, you see them like, you know, you go into a, like a McDonald's or something. There's that little yellow thing stand, you know, on the floor. Cuidado, piso mojado. What does that mean? Caution, wet floor, right? Okay. Cuidado, as I've been working on this one, means more than just notice that the floor is wet. Okay. Cuidado has the idea, it has feelings of wake up! Pay attention. You realize there's danger here. Slow down. Step carefully. Take precautions to avoid slipping on the wet floor. Be careful is the Hebrew word shamar. Same idea. Be on your guard. Take steps to preserve yourself. Watch out. You are moving towards something that has got serious trouble attached to it. And so Joshua's warning includes prophetic, it's prescriptive advice. Be careful. Observe what Moses has commanded you. Don't stop loving and obeying and serving God with everything that you are. Same commandment that Jesus highlighted. Remember that they asked him, what's the greatest commandment? Jesus highlighted it as the greatest commandment. Applies to us today. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. So these are words of a heartfelt fatherly advice. God has given you what you asked for. Be careful. There's real danger to your relationship with God, so take steps to remain 100% committed to Him. Bottom line, we are in significant danger when we try to keep our feet planted on both sides of the river. Say that with me. We are in significant danger when we try to keep our feet planted on both sides of the river. Verse 10. When they came to the region of the Jordan, which is in the land of Canaan, the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh built an altar there by the Jordan, a large altar in appearance. And the sons of Israel heard it and said, behold, the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh have built an altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan, in the region of the Jordan, on the side belonging to the sons of Israel. When the sons of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel gathered themselves at Shiloh to go against them in war. If you look at the map, you'll see the locations we're talking about here. Gilead was basically land east of the Jordan. Shiloh, by the time the land had been divided amongst the tribes, Shiloh had become the religious and political center of the nation. Shiloh was where the tent of meeting was, tabernacle. The Ark of the Covenant was there. And where the altar that was built by these 2.5 tribes, where this altar, this huge altar was, we don't exactly know, but it was someplace just west of the Jordan River, opposite Gilead. Verse 13. Then the sons of Israel sent to the sons of Reuben and to the sons of Gad and half-tribe Manasseh who lived into the land of Gilead. Phinehas, the sons of Eleazar, the priest, and with him 10 chiefs, one chief for each father's household from each of the tribes of Israel. And each one of them was the head of the father's household among thousands of Israel. They came to the sons of Reuben, to the sons of Gad, and to the half-tribe of Manasseh, to the land of Gilead. And they spoke to them, saying, thus says the whole congregation of the Lord. We're speaking for everybody now. What is this unfaithful act which you have committed against the God of Israel? Turning away from following the Lord this day by building yourselves an altar to rebel against the Lord this day. Is not the iniquity of Peor enough for us, from which we have not cleansed ourselves to this day, although a plague came on the congregation of the Lord, that you must turn away this day from following the Lord? If you rebel against the Lord this day, if you rebel against the Lord today, He will be angry with the whole congregation of Israel tomorrow. If, however, the land of your possession is unclean, then cross into the land of the Lord, where the Lord's tabernacle stands, and take possession among us. Only do not rebel against the Lord or rebel against us by building an altar for yourselves besides the altar of the Lord our God. Did not Achan, the son of Zerah, act unfaithfully in the things under the ban and wrath fall on all the congregation of Israel? And that man did not perish alone in his iniquity. Let's pause. There are two things here that we need to see. First, the concern for the spiritual welfare of the nation. The concern for the spiritual welfare of the nation. Imagine if one-third of us decided to build an altar out in the back parking lot. Huge platform for worship. Comfy teal-colored chairs, sound system, the whole works. Even bigger than in here. And the rest of us would probably want to know why. Why are you doing this? And that's especially true of Shiloh, if this is the place where God has said, worship me there. Peor refers back in history, back to a time when Israel got into fornication with the women of Moab. They were participating in their fertility rites and their sexual immorality. They began making sacrifices to the Moabite gods, especially Baal of Peor. And God sent a plague where about 24,000 Israelites died. The deeper issues of that sin, the dangers of falling back into that spiritual idolatry are something that the Joshua and his people even at that time recognized that they still struggle with. Achan. Remember back Joshua chapter 7? Remember this? When Israel defeated Jericho, Achan kept things. He hid them in his tent. Kept things that God had said, destroy those things. He acted in disobedience to God. And because, as a result of that, Israel was defeated at Ai, when they went up against Ai, to defeat Ai. And Achan and his family, they were stoned. And the things that he kept in his family, all that stuff was burned. God's judgment on spiritual infidelity. There's a real spiritual concern here. What is this altar business? Have Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh, man, have they gone off the deep end spiritually? Like some did at Peor and Achan and his family did? If we have to, we're going to deal with this thing quickly and effectively. Otherwise the whole nation is in trouble. Spiritual concern. Second, notice the purpose of the delegation. In response to what they've heard about the altar, the delegation, this delegation is sent down from Shiloh. They're sent down, they send Phinehas, the son of the priest Eleazar, the representatives of the other 9.5 tribes, and everyone else that wanted to come. They all go down. Three accusations are made. Verse 16, three of them. You acted unfaithfully towards God. You've acted unfaithfully towards us. Second, you've turned away from God. You're backsliders. You've backslidden. And third, you rebelled against God. You've deliberately turned against God's will. Notice this also. Along with the accusations, this is an offer. Verse 19. If you're struggling spiritually, I mean, if this really is a spiritual problem because of things that are going on east of the Jordan and what that land is like, you know, we can make space for you guys on the western side of the river. Why don't you guys come back and join us back in God's promised land? See, Israel hasn't written off their brothers spiritually. They're not just rushing down to Shiloh with their swords drawn. The purpose of the delegation is to ask questions. It is to warn of danger. It is to make an offer of doing whatever it takes to offer help. Verse 21. Here's the answer. It comes from the 2.5 tribes. Their answer. Then the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh answered and spoke to the heads of the families of Israel. The mighty one, God, the Lord, He knows. And may Israel itself know, if it was in rebellion or if in an unfaithful act against the Lord, do not save us this day. Kill us now. Verse 23. If we have built us an altar to turn away from following the Lord, or if to offer burnt offering or grain offering on it, or to offer sacrifices of peace offerings on it, may the Lord Himself require it. If God wants us to do it, okay, we didn't do it for that purpose, but if God wants us to do it, we're following God, we'll do it. But that's not why He built this altar. Verse 24. But truly, we have done this out of concern. For a reason. Saying, in time to come, your sons may say to our sons, what have you to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? For the Lord has made the Jordan a border between us and you. You sons of Reuben and sons of Gad, you have no portion in the Lord. So your sons may make our sons stop fearing the Lord. Pause there. Three things we can't miss. First, the reason that they have built this altar is out of concern. It's out of fear. We took this great step of faith and consecration and dedication to the one mighty God out of great concern for the spiritual welfare of our future generations. We built this altar on this side of the river. Second, why the concern? Your sons may make our sons stop fearing God. Third, why? Because God put the Jordan between us and you. You know, when we're trusting ourselves, We live in fear of what may happen. Anyone ever been there? And if something does happen, it is a whole lot easier to blame God and other people than to seek what God may be trying to show us about our relationship with Him. Ever been there? Don't be fooled by all the spiritual language. These people are living in fear because they're trusting themselves and not God. Verse 26. Therefore, because of our great concern for the spiritual welfare of our children, and because you and God might mess that up, therefore, we said, let us build an altar, not for burnt offering or for sacrifice. Rather, it shall be a witness between us and you and between your generations after, between our generations after us, that we are to perform the service of the Lord before Him with our burnt offerings, and with our sacrifices, and with our peace offerings, so that your sons will not say to our sons in time to come, you have no portion in the Lord. Therefore, we said, it shall also come about, if they say this to us or to our generations in time to come, that we shall say, see the copy of the altar of the Lord, which our fathers made, not for burnt offerings or for sacrifice, rather it is a witness between us and you. Far be it for us that we should rebel against the Lord and turn away from following the Lord this day by building an altar for burnt offerings, for grain offerings, or for sacrifice beside the altar of the Lord our God, which is before us in the tabernacle, back up in Shiloh. The altar is a replica. It's a monument made to look like the altar in Shiloh, made to promote unity, keep the nation together, especially spiritually, so that when future generations of Reubenites and Gadites and half-Manassites see that huge altar there, these future generations are supposed to think to themselves, hey, we're a part of those people over there on the west side of the river. And that sounds good. Jeremiah 17:9. The heart is more deceitful than all else and is desperately what? Wicked or sick, right? Who can understand it? Sin is deceptive. While all this sounds good, the concern for their children, all the words about how great God is, at the core of their choice is the selfish motivation of wanting the familiar grazing land east of the river in Gilead. The choice to stay on the eastern side of the river where it's comfortable. No matter how we try to justify our actions or even dressing them up in spiritual platitudes, choices about giving and serving, we choose to expose ourselves, what we choose to expose ourselves to or participate in, the attitudes we harbor in our hearts, the thoughts that we entertain, no matter how we try to justify all of that, we need to be reminded that sin is deceptive. And with God, without God in control of our hearts, we are easily deceived. The whole nation of Israel is ready to go to war over this thing. It's that serious a spiritual danger. And out of concern, they send a delegation, they offer help, even giving them land. But for Reuben and Gad and half Manasseh, there's no genuine accountability, no openness to counsel, only a self-deception, a self-justification and accusations. Verse 30, hang with me, a few more verses to go. Verse 30, so when Phinehas, the priest and leaders of the congregation, and the heads of the families of Israel were with him, heard the words which the sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, and the sons of Manasseh spoke, it pleased them. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest said to the sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, and the sons of Manasseh, today we know that the Lord is in our midst, because you have not committed this unfaithful act against the Lord. Now you have delivered the sons of Israel from the hand of the Lord. Then Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and the leaders returned from the sons of Reuben, from the sons of Gad, sons of Gilead. Boy, over and over these names. Came to the sons of Israel and brought back word to them. The word pleased the sons of Israel. The answer pleased the sons of Israel. The sons of Israel blessed God. They did not speak of going up against them in war to destroy the land which the sons of Reuben, sons of Gad were living. The sons of Reuben, sons of Gad called the altar witness, for they said, it is a witness between us and the Lord is God. The answer that was given was enough to satisfy the delegation. Whatever the circumstances, this delegation realizes this altar is not going to be used for purposes that will bring God's wrath down on the nation. What would have been a disastrous fratricide, not necessary. Okay? So they go back. Okay, thinking about all this relates to us today. There is a Peanuts cartoon where Charlie Brown is standing on the mound, pitcher's mound. And it's after he's lost his umpteenth thousandth game, I don't know. And the score is 184-0. Okay? And Charlie Brown says, how can we lose when we're so sincere? Okay? Sincerity is no substitute for faith. Say that with me. Sincerity is no substitute for faith. We can try so hard. We can do all the right things, living for God, and yet we can still live in fear. We can still live without rest. We can still live without His victory and blessing. Last Sunday, I shared about some of the difficulties I was having with our computer at home. And at one point, I was ready to fix this thing with a sledgehammer. You ever been there? You know, I haven't quite figured out yet what to do about the error codes that keep coming up in Chinese. I haven't quite got that one yet. But this last week, a light bulb went off in my head, and I think I may have solved a huge problem. One of the brilliant things that I've done about a year ago was I bought this external hard drive and copied everything from the hard drive on the computer onto this external hard drive. All the files, all the documents, the program files, the whole Windows operating system, everything. And my theory was at the time that this seemed brilliant was that if the hard drive on the computer ever crashed, then all I had to do was transfer all this information in the operating system from the external hard drive. All I had to do was transfer that back onto the hard drive on the computer, and then I could just go on as if nothing had ever happened. Which, of course, didn't work, right? And now, as best as I can understand this, when we use our computers, the Windows operating system, it remembers a part of what we did. So the changes, when we're using Windows and shut down the computer and all, changes are made to the system files. So that the system file on our computer was changing. It was being updated, but the system file on the external hard drive wasn't being changed. And what that meant was that every time we turned on the computer and the external hard drive, we had the potential of two Windows systems operating, trying to operate simultaneously on one hard drive. You with me on that? Okay, it doesn't take Bill Gates to understand that one computer with two conflicting operating systems is in serious trouble. When we try to live in the promises of God with one foot planted on the west bank of the Jordan, and we cling to ourselves and our own self-will unsurrendered to God, trying to keep our other foot planted on the east side of the Jordan, it doesn't matter how sincere we may be in our commitment to God, striving to do all the right things. If we haven't stepped completely over the Jordan River and cut ourselves off from what lies behind, it's like we're trying to operate with two operating systems in our hearts. God's and ours. And when we do that, we are in serious, serious trouble. Sincerity is no substitute for faith. No matter how much we may convince ourselves that what we may be doing for Him, if we want God's victory in our lives, if we want His rest, if we want His blessing, if we want to live without fear, regardless of our circumstances, we've got to let go of the east bank of the river. All that represents for us. And we've got to choose to dwell in His land in the way that He desires for us to dwell there. Let's bow together in prayer. You know, the hardest part of all that was? Hardest part of all that was deleting what was on the external hard drive. If I delete this, what's going to happen on my hard drive on the computer? And trusting God that if I delete this, it's going to be okay. Right? In prayer. God, we need to let go. And we can be well-seasoned Christians and still wonder why, if we're so sincere, we're losing. We don't have rest. That peace we're looking for, it's just not there. Circumstances are coming and we're just getting pounded. And in the midst of that, at the core of who we are, we're restless. We're living in tents, not in the surety of the promises that You've given to us. Father, I can't speak. I don't know all the issues in the hearts of everyone here. I know in my life you show me things and I'm clinging to the East Bank. Maybe you come this morning and you've never even given your life to Jesus Christ. You're just, the West Bank is a dream. You're still trying to figure out life on your own. Man, let go of it. And if you're trying to live with feet in both places, you know, I want to be a Christian, but I want to do it my way. Can't do it your way. That's not faith. You're still trying to operate on your own system. You might say to God, God, I gotta let go of it. I give it to you. You know what it is, or God will show you. Just ask Him. He'll show you. This is what I'm holding on to. Let go of it. God, help us. Because it is kind of a scary thing. How do we delete the old? How do we let go of it? Set it aside. We don't go there anymore. We're stepping completely across the river. And there's an uncertainty up there. And we know so much about you. But sometimes, God, and you know this about us, it's hard to step over the river. So God, I pray this for myself. I pray this for each one of us here. Help us to step over. Delete the old operating system. Move us to where you would have us to be. And may we know your blessings and your victory and your rest in our lives. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.